You do a pretty good George Bush.
Okay.
So maybe like George W. Bush, if he was the one to normalize relations with Kim Jong-il.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So like there's something very important about peninsulas. And when we unite them, they, you know, my brother, he governed a peninsula. And now here I am connecting a peninsula together. And that's freedom.
That's good.
Is he all right? I don't know. That's all I can come up
with. We're cooking
with
gas.
Off the cuff here.
I'm sorry. Sorry. I'm not good at George W. Bush.
Okay. It takes practice.
Wait, how do you do it?
A good George Bush impression starts with restricting the mouth. You know, but
okay.
He's got that tiny little mouth.
Yeah, he's got a tiny mouth.
He's got a tiny little mouth.
But and then you have to be a man from Connecticut faking a Texas accent.
Okay.
Right.
You see, Mr. Ill, I wanted to apologize for putting you in the axis of evil category. I see now that you're more like a moderate rebel.
Now you see.
There you go.
We got a peninsula, and a peninsula divided against itself can't be a peninsula. So it goes out in the ocean and makes it an island. So what we have to do, we have to unite the peninsula so that everyone can get their Samsung dishwashers. I believe North Korea could benefit from an LG smartphone.
Yeah, what is it about the George Bush voice? It's like it's just like, yeah, I don't know. It's like a guy faking a Texas accent with a tiny mouth.
Yeah.
That's the heart of it.
Yeah,
and it's kind of high. You know, the voice is kind of high, and it much like Michael Caine, it comes from the back of the throat. You know, it's like, you know, it's all back there somewhere.
Yeah. Quite impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Like, it's crazy. That guy killed so many motherfucking people for no reason.
Yeah, for no, yeah.
And now he's what, like painting pictures of dogs?
Yeah.
Or like the soldiers that he fucked up?
Yeah, and like hugging Michelle Obama or whatever, yeah.
We're this original.
Yeah. I still want to know where that book came from he was reading on 9/11.
Oh, the
My
the
Pet Goat?
Yeah.
That you can't get that book anymore.
Yeah.
That's the one 9/11 theory that like I really...
Well, remember we asked ChatGPT why the book can't be found anymore, and it either hallucinated an answer or it knew that it responded that they took it off the shelves because people they didn't want it to be like a macabre memento. They didn't want it to like be a thing that sold.
So my macabre memento collection is going to be incomplete forever. All my macabre mementos.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you'd probably, if you could get it, put it right up there with Mein Kampf.
Right,
know?
Yeah,
like
right
on the bookshelf.
Right, you know? Yeah, right there.
You're just one of those people that you know, reads everything.
I want to know both sides. I want to know both sides.
Yeah.
No. We haven't heard from George.
Oh, speaking of having heard from people.
Yeah.
All right, we are blessed with a guest. Sadly, not blessed with Brittany.
No.
As we commented on last episode, Brittany is on a train to Georgia, or already there?
She's there. She's confirmed in country.
Nice.
Doing whatever she wants to do.
Yeah, she's got a gun in her hand, and she is free.
Yeah, that is.
She's a free Britney.
The flavored vape juice.
Yeah, a lot of flavored vape juice. She sent me a link to a like this pellet gun. She's like, I want this. This thing is so much fun. So like, we're gonna grab another one of those.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So now we're this podcast has reached full form.
Yes.
This it's final form.
Yes.
In that it's just three dudes on a microphone.
We made it. We made it.
Yeah, we did it, guys. We did it.
Yeah. So longtime listeners will remember the dulcet tones of Adam, who came on talking about, I think it was labor relations last time, right?
Yeah, I think it was Buffalo elections and India.
Oh yeah, India Walton. India Walton.
Hell yeah.
Man, remember that?
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
Yeah, that was rough.
Remember the stamps?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just remember the Democrats were like, we're going to be the Republicans this time.
Yeah. Do you think the stamps were made in a union shop?
Probably not.
Just thought about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Right? Good question.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to kind of want to go find that out now.
Yeah.
Anyway, Adam, why don't you describe your day job for us?
During the day, Monday to Friday, usually 8 to 5-ish, I'm one of those good feds that works for the National Labor Relations Board.
Hell yeah.
So you, like, count the votes for a ballot,
ballot initiative and... Yeah, so we do, well, first, you know, I got to say that I'm here in my own personal private capacity, and, you know, nothing that I say should or can be attributed to the NLRB. But yeah, no, I mean, regular day, there's not really a such thing as a regular day, but sometimes it's conducting elections, find out if the union's got a majority support of a particular workplace. Other times it's most of the time, actually, it's conducting investigation into unfair labor practices that are filed by either individuals, unions, and employers.
Wow. That sounds like a lot of email.
It's a lot of email and phone calls and letters.
Yeah.
Are you using the ChatGPT?
No, I do not use ChatGPT, other than what's baked into the web browser to help with searching. Yeah.
Can't avoid it.
No. So, because of Adam's good Fed position, yes, he cannot comment on ongoing labor issues. And so, Chris and I are going to briefly discuss a local labor issue, and Adam is going to have professionally no opinion on it.
That's correct. Yeah. I will professionally be impartial. I may have some personal thoughts that I'll be free to share.
Okay.
Nice. I have rights. I still have rights.
Yeah, the man has rights.
Especially on Sunday, for some reason.
Is that true?
No.
I wouldn't put it past our federal government to be like, on the Lord's Day, you can you have one extra right or something.
That'd be
like
a Massachusetts specific NLRB rule.
Which is good, because what we're talking about is happening in Massachusetts. This comes to us from the Berkshire Eagle, the most adorably named newspaper. Mass MoCA union and museum management have agreed to come back to bargaining table amid strike.
So, you love to see it.
Mass MoCA, the Massachusetts Museum of Contemporary Art, is on strike. They organized with UAW for better pay and working conditions, and they're currently on the 10th day of a picket to get management back to the table to negotiate. And at 4 p.m. Saturday, so that's yesterday from when we've been talking about, or when we're talking right now, the two sides have agreed to sit down to talk about differing minimum wage and overall wage increase proposals.
Fuck yeah.
Museum reached out to the union Wednesday about going back to the bargaining table with a scheduled sit-down. A resolution could come quickly, and we are hopeful, but it isn't assured, the email reads. And there would be four representatives from the bargaining unit to meet with management to get everyone back to work, and hopefully with some better pay.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Casualty from this is the magnetic fields has had to postpone their show.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. But
there'll be time for love songs later.
Yeah. They agreed to postpone the performance of 69 love songs to May 3rd and 4th in consideration of our audience.
Nice.
So that I am in support of the workers, and I hope that they get everything that they're demanding.
Yes.
Chris, what do you think?
I think that, you know, the workers of the world should unite Mm-hmm. And in doing so, we can bring about a social revolution. And part of that process is them all, you know, building collective strength amongst themselves. And that comes in the form of organized actions. And sometimes that strikes. And sometimes you don't get to listen to the magnetic fields, but you know what? There's more important things.
Adam.
So, I mean, one thing that, I've observed is over the last couple of years, there does seem to be increase in the kind of the appetite of museum workers in particular to organize and do this. I'm not sure how long the Mass MoCA workers have been organized. Is this the first contract or is this a successor? Do we know?
I think it's their first.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, there's been a couple big, big battles. The Philadelphia, museum, there's New York City. There's been a bunch of, workers that seem to be in line with what you guys are advocating for, some sort of social and perhaps cultural revolution.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think, you know, we'll see how it goes, but it sounds like they've got some support out there.
Both Massachusetts Senators Ed Markey and Elizabeth Warren have tweeted their support for the striking workers. So you got both of them on your side.
Hell yeah.
That's something. Adam, would the NLRB adjudicate a cultural revolution?
Not unless there was some kind of violation of the act in there. Maybe.
Which there totally would have to be.
Yeah, there would have to.
There would have to be.
Yeah.
Your reaction's going to be a thing. And so, yeah, the NLRB will play its part.
Yeah.
If it's still deemed constitutional in the coming years.
Yeah, how about that?
Shitty.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. I think about Tesla a lot, and I think about SpaceX a lot. You know, they're always in the news, and they're just like these, agglomerations of just like floating surplus value in the form of like just capital markets and stuff. Like,
and you got the Elon Musk body pillow.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah,
you do.
No, you do. You're the one with the body pillow.
But yeah, it's pretty crazy. I don't know, who exactly is involved. There's like multiple huge mega cap companies that are suing the NLRB, in federal court, I think, around basically saying that the organization is unconstitutional.
Yeah.
And that having a governmental organization that's there to adjudicate on behalf of the working populace is not what the framers intended.
Trader Joe's also on there.
Oh, yeah. Which sucks, because they have the best snacks.
Yeah,
I can't go there.
We have to go find your snacks at Aldi, the working man's Trader Joe's.
Yeah, so this is like one of those things where it's not exactly history repeating itself, but definitely, you know, rhyming. When the NLRA first came into existence back in 1935, for the first couple of years, employers really did not want to play ball at all. They challenged it every single way that they could until they got to the Supreme Court in 1937, where at that time, the constitutionality of the agency and the act was upheld. And that's kind of where we've been until now. I don't know all the you know, sort of legal arguments included in the suit, but I think that there's essentially like three main pieces that the general counsel, the head of the agency, the structure of the NLRB is essentially unconstitutional. There's another piece of the argument that comes on the back end of I think it's a Seventh Circuit Court decision that held that something that the Securities and Exchange Council was doing that involved leveling fines, punitive damages. There was something wrong with that, according to the Seventh Circuit. So that's another piece of it where they're coming at the NLRB. kind of, you know, a hole with that argument is that we don't do punitive damages.
Right. You have to, like, put up a letter in the break room that says we're sorry or something. Right?
Yeah. I mean, we mock it, but there's a lot of resistance to notice posting and the language that goes into those things. Mm-hmm. But it
doesn't really matter, though. It's so small and people are so hungry that, like, they're not going to read it anyway.
Yep. And then the other cost is the cost of not having done the unlawful thing, like hiring someone back with back pay. Those are the primary costs. And then there's a third thing that they're upset about, but I can't really track it. I'm not too concerned that it has to do with the administrative law judges and how they cannot be removed for anything except
from Congress, right? Yeah, it's a part problem with the division of powers. Yeah,
right. Yep. So, I mean, in a nutshell, the argument is that the NLRB is judge, jury, and as executioner, in essence, which I don't think that's accurate.
Yeah.
And I'm not too concerned that. My job is going to disappear within the next couple of years.
Well, that's good.
You had an interesting take on this that, like, well, if they're concerned about administrative law judges, then, like, well, who replaces the law judge in making that decision?
Yeah, you know, I've got
industry appointees.
Well, no, I mean, I've got an idea. I don't know how far it would go, but if it turns out that the administrative law judges that write decisions after they go to trial aren't constitutional, then, you know, I don't know. Maybe they should start letting board agents and field attorneys start writing decisions.
To keep the metaphor going, field executions.
I guess just like the legal equivalent of like fragging your officer.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but the whole like pendulum, it definitely, you know, swings back and forth at the NLRB, probably to a greater extent than perhaps other federal agencies, but that's just the way that it is, and that's the way that it has been. So, you know, in the beginning, it was something that the unions all loved and were grateful for. There was some, you know, a little bit of division about, you know, whether the NLRB was good or bad in the beginning among some on the very far left, maybe weren't the most supportive of it.
But golden handcuffs, we call them.
Yeah. And then, you know, employers hated it in the beginning. Supreme Court upholds it. Then in the 40s, it gets amended. So the unions start to not be so appreciative of it coming around 1947 with the Taft-Hartley amendments. Because up until that point, there wasn't any unfair labor practices that unions could commit. They just weren't unfair labor practices against unions. So you start to see a swing back, and then I won't do the whole, you know, tennis match through the decades of how we've got to where we're at now, but we do have you know, at the top of the NLRB someone who's trying to push that pendulum back in the opposite direction of where it was before we got to the current general counsel. So when that happens, you can, you know, get a response that might look like big employers bringing suits to challenge something that they don't like.
Yeah. Would you say it's fair to characterize the various movements of like the federal government vis-a-vis the NLRB, you know, tied to levels of like labor militancy and or like, you know, conflict between workers and capital?
Yeah, I mean, before the NLRB labor disputes were adjudicated through baseball bats and bullets, it wasn't a very pretty sort of situation. I don't think that we're going to get back to adjudicating labor disputes with baseball bats and bullets. I think that actually there is some compromise that's going on. There was a big decision last August that is controversial, and there are polarizing opinions on it. In my opinion, it gives employers more options on what their choices are when presented with a request or demand for recognition. Under the old paradigm, before this CEMEX or CEMEX decision came along, the employer had a couple options. They could elect or voluntarily choose to recognize the union. That's always an option.
It's always a great option.
It's an option. And then the other one is go through, you know, have an NLRB election if the union petitions for one. That's the old standard. Under the new standard, if an employer is confronted with a demand, they've got now three choices. One, voluntarily recognize. Two, file their own petition to test the claim that the union has a majority status, or three, await the processing of a petition that had been filed by a union. So right off the bat, there's an affirmative duty that's been imposed upon employers, and they don't like it. On the other back end of the decision, it also changes when the NLRB will issue a bargaining order. So let's say, for example, a union makes a demand for recognition, they've got majority support, and then between that date and the election, the employer commits some act or some series of acts that are unfair labor practices that might have or could have affected the results. Under the old standard, except in the most flagrant of cases, the cost of that unlawful act would have been to rerun the election. I don't have the exact statistics on the number of elections that the unions have won as a second election, but it's pretty close to zero. I'm sure it's not zero. I'm unaware of any that have ever been won by a union after the employer messed around during the campaign.
But it's really rare.
It's pretty rare, and it takes a long time.
Yeah.
Under the new standard, if an employer commits unfair labor practices that could have affected the outcome of the results, the NLRB is in has a much reduced standard for issuing a bargaining order today than it did last year. So anything that would have resulted in an election being rerun before could result in an affirmative bargaining order, where the NLRB, you know, tells the parties that you've got to begin negotiating, even though the union didn't win.
Yeah, you basically have forfeited via cheating.
Kind of, yeah.
So, just to make it clear, so now if a group of workers say that they want to form a union and the majority of them are on that side, and then the employer does something, you know, an unfair labor practice, which could be something like, you know, firing the organizers or something like that. Instead of, at worst, in the old system, having to rerun the election, now the NLRB can just say, time to start bargaining.
Yeah, you fucked up, bro.
We're just gonna, you don't even need to do a second election. Let's just go.
Yeah. It has been described by some as the fuck around, find out decision.
Okay.
That's a succinct way to put it.
It's also been described as the, you know, 9/11, Pearl Harbor, Hiroshima
judicial of management. Yeah.
So management. Depending on which side you're on, the perspective you take probably, you know, falls somewhere between those two. And for me, I'm just in the middle.
Just calling balls and strikes.
Exactly.
Do you know the or remember the facts of the CEMEX decision that made that happen?
Not entirely. I mean, so the case itself, the conduct that had been committed by the employer, the facts of that case were severe enough that a bargaining order would have been warranted under the old standard. I don't know exactly, you know, what that means, but it means that there would have had to have been hallmark violations. So either a threat of a plant closure, terminating a bunch of employees, but serious, significant unfair labor practices.
Hallmark violation just sounds like you forgot to send your mom a Mother's Day.
Or you chose one that was just really distasteful.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the wrong event. Yeah, you send like a sympathies card during a bridal shower or something. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, right, so okay. That's sort of the, I look at that as like a compromise, something that's been born out of a lot of the stuff that's been going on. Because the thing that we didn't get is there's still no tanks at the NLRB.
Not yet.
Yeah, one of the few federal agencies that doesn't have a SWAT team associated with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like these fucking cops are constantly like fucking up and driving their tanks into the wrong houses and stuff. And like, I don't think the NLRB has made any such violations. So I think the surplus military gear that's just getting gifted to the local PDs,
right?
I think a little bit should make its way over to the NLRB.
Yeah, toss an Abrams tank over. Yeah. You know, the NLRB way.
How awesome would it be if like they treated you know, boardroom crime like they do like small time like drug running? They flashbang the old glass boardroom and shatter. Right, yeah.
Yeah. Freeze! I'm here to take an affidavit.
or better, like they do the like the trophy picture after a bus.
Yeah,
it's like a golf club, a pen,
yeah,
and like a note that says like fire all of them, and it's like everyone with their arms crossed behind, you know, like behind the table, yeah, with all these things,
cases of Fiji water and Dante.
Thanks to the brave efforts of the NLRB, all of this will remain off the streets and out of the workplace.
Yeah, like a bejeweled ivory handled letter opener. This felon has been brought to justice.
I think there's something else that the three of us are equally well positioned to comment on.
Sure, so, let's go.
Rats are high on marijuana evidence at an infested police building in New Orleans.
Well, good for them.
Yeah. So there's a big hole in this story that I think that we'll get to in a second. Yeah. But so according to the AP, rats have gotten into confiscated pot at the New Orleans aging police headquarters. And the building's also being taken over by mold and cockroaches, but that's less funny. So we're going to let that go.
Yeah. Cockroaches famously don't share the same immune system and biophysiology as humans, which bizarrely rats apparently do.
Yeah.
Which is why we've been torturing them systematically for decades to try to drug test, right, and everything else.
So their lives are worth less. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But I guess my point is those fuckers can probably get high.
Yeah. So they say police superintendent Ann Kirkpatrick told New Orleans city council members, quote, "The rats eating our marijuana, they're all high." But here's the thing though, right? This is the hole in the story. Don't you have to decarb it first?
Well, if you eat enough of it.
If you eat enough of it.
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe like the rats have something that can decarb it as well.
Yeah, I don't know what the body temperature of rats is, but not that high.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess rats like could eat a lot for their own like
their body weight. Yeah. Yeah.
And imagine if like you found one, you know, a big old cola nug. Like that'd only be like what? Like 0.1% of your body weight,
right?
If a rat ate that, that's like half.
Yeah,
and so probably increases the effectiveness.
Right, right. Okay, I could see that.
Or maybe it was decarbed.
Maybe it was. Yeah,
maybe they got weed from like that was about to go into a batch.
Yeah,
you know, when they kicked in the door and like killed the dog and seized the weed.
Before they stood in front of a table.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That was the thing that was nagging me the whole time. Because, you know, cops lie. And so, like, I don't know if they're maybe just, like, embellishing this. They're also media savvy. So they know that everyone's going to be like, high rats. He's like, I just did that, right?
Yeah.
And so they're just like, if the rats are high on the pot, it'll travel more, and then whoever is in Congress
we need more infrastructure for the police department to keep these rats safe from confiscated weed.
So apparently they want to move to another building with a 10-year lease, so much like Troy, they are understanding the power of renting municipal office space.
Oh, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
That perfect private public partnership.
But that's temporary until they find a way to rehab their building that was built in 1968 that is full of vermin and mold.
You know, it sounds like we could recruit a very powerful set of allies into the local tenants union in Louisiana.
Yeah, the rats.
The police.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
Get some tanks involved in this. Landlord action.
I would also feel bad. Like, imagine you work really hard to get like a good crop. You know, you were very judicious in your moisture control, all this stuff.
Yeah, your training.
And they get, and not only does it get confiscated,
yeah,
but it also gets brought into a room where it will grow mold.
Yeah,
you know,
pretty terrible.
And then a rat eats it.
Yeah.
You know? And that might be the other thing, is maybe the rats aren't high on the weed. They're high on the mold that's on the weed.
It can happen. Mold contamination can cause brain inflammation.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can look and act like you're really fucked up on drugs.
Yeah. But it's really your brain dying. Yeah.
No, it's serious shit. My brother is in a housing situation right now where he's got a mold lawyer, but because the landlord of his old apartment, like, basically allowed for like an outrageously high level of mold to grow. And it was like, you know, it was off the charts from the little sensor that they bring in to do test. And
it's just like exploded in their hand. They're just like,
Yeah. And it's like got him really fucked up.
Yeah. Like, mold can fuck you up. Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully he makes full recovery and, hopefully some legal recompense.
Yeah.
Fucking shitty ass landlord. And that's in San Diego, which is, at least for a period of a year, was the most expensive city in the country to live in.
It's always Comic-Cons.
Yeah, it's a conspiracy of rentierism.
Yeah,
and something ought to be done about that.
Isn't there a building in Albany where, like, there's claims that a bunch of people are dying because of mold infestation?
Oh, I don't know that.
Yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I hadn't heard. Yeah, not at all. I mean, it's probably multiple buildings at least have terrible mold problems. I don't know if there's one where people are dying over it, though. I don't know. I haven't heard that. Maybe it's the central warehouse.
Yeah. But speaking of growing weed,
yeah,
that's something that all of us in upstate New York are going to be able to do. And I am excited. I think we've got like 4 months left. The marijuana legislation board? Like,
I think they passed their rule, so it's just 60 days from maybe a couple weeks, month ago.
Yeah. So I think it's like sometime in June.
Yeah,
like late May. Yeah. That it'll be allowed. Yeah. Our friend Adam is a federal employee, so he doesn't touch this stuff. But of course. We're
me. I love it.
Touch it all the time.
Yeah,
get my little fingers in it.
That's why they call me Sticky Fingers.
It sucks because like all those legal cannabis stores got the whole point of that head start was so that they could have an established business before everyone just grew it for themselves. And then that just basically never happened.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel bad for them. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Hochul.
Is that the opposite? Didn't it work the opposite way in Massachusetts
They went? Yeah. In Massachusetts, they made home grow legal right away because it doesn't require any action from the government. You know, like you just need to stop putting people in jail for growing plants in their home for personal consumption. And that went actually really well. Such that by the time the legal market opened up, there was already a bunch of just organic competition in people's friend networks for, you know, homegrown weed. And so the prices, I think, like, weren't nearly as high as we're going to see. But the fact that we still don't have, like, a legal shop in Troy, like, what, 2 years after they passed that? Yeah, it was 2020. Yeah,
no, there's some. There's
one. 4 years, shit. Yeah. Oh my God.
There's one up on Hoosick Street.
Yeah.
I think.
Is there? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, thank you. At the very end of Hoosick.
Oh yeah, I haven't been.
Maybe it's Brunswick, I'm not sure, but I think there's something up there.
Okay.
There's signs where they're putting in one this, do you know the strip mall down by me, down on Northern? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's the greatest strip mall in history. We've got two competing dollar stores, a laundromat, a cell phone store.
Great beer store.
A beer store, a liquor store, and a European restaurant.
Yeah.
I don't know what's
isn't
leaving.
That, isn't that what it's called? Like European restaurant?
Yeah. That's it. That's all of Europe.
It's got all of them.
Yeah, they call it European fusion.
Yeah.
there's apparently going to be some weed store in there now.
So right. Hell yeah.
It's like going to be the perfect strip mall. Everything you will need.
Hell yeah. That beer store is Beer Universe, which is like owned by like a family around here. And there's one of them on my street. The one that's on my street is like a pauper compared to a Prince for the one that's near your house. Because it has like almost no imports. There's like a lot of stuff that they're selling like half off because it's like expired product that they got from some other place and stuff. But the one that you got has like the craziest craft selection like ever. Like the cave just goes and goes and goes. And I remember because I when my wife was really on the Lindeman's Lambic, she was really into the creek on that. So I'd usually get
ladies love a lambic.
Oh yeah. It's great.
No, they're good.
It's a great farmhouse style ale. Naturally inoculated.
Yeah,
with yeast.
Wow.
The natural way. Yeah, they're like one of the only places that has it around here.
Would you call those big naturals?
Yeah, the right? 750
yeah.
mil ones. Yeah.
Yeah, they're big naturals. Yeah. Just trying to stay relevant, you know, Sydney Sweeney discourse, you know, I just wanted.
Oh, yeah, I'm missing out, delightfully, but please inform me. What
Woke's dead?
Yeah, woke is dead because a lady with big boobs went on Saturday Night Live, I think, is really the whole thing.
And she was woke on
Maine? No, there was nothing.
It's just dead.
It's because she had big boobs. And she hosted Saturday Night Live.
And so Saturday Night Live is woke? Or
No, woke is dead because a lady with big boobs hosted Saturday Night Live.
Forget about it, all the other times that it's happened.
No, that's it.
Okay, that doesn't scan at all.
That's where we're at right now.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know who Sidney Sweeney is. I just heard that Republicans refuse to admit that she's hot, and I looked up a picture of her, and she's hot. Well, so I don't really know much more than what's going on there.
More as it develops. do we want to talk about Boeing at all?
So
Boeing like killed a guy, maybe
the whistleblower guy.
He
was on they did a big thing on John Oliver's show like the week before he died, actually. So I'm excited to see John Oliver's show tonight where he talks about what happened to this guy I was just talking about 2 weeks ago.
What happened?
He worked in South Carolina, I think it was, on the 787 Dream Max nightmare airplane. I don't know, whatever it was.
It was all a dream.
and he was a whistleblower back in like 2017, 18 or something, saying that like he wouldn't fly in any Boeing plane today just by looking at the quality control that he saw. And he was going in, he was being deposed just this week over quality control issues. He told a friend, allegedly, this has gone around, that he told a friend that, like, if he dies, it wasn't suicide. But then he was found in his truck, shot in the head with a gun in his hand.
Was it multiple gunshots?
I think it was.
God.
Yeah. I think it was like one. I don't know. Let me double check.
How do these people suicide themselves with multiple gunshots? Right, well, maybe it wasn't.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't. But I, you know, it's a better story if there was. But I'll double check that. But it's crazy. They're just like murking people. Isn't there also the The video
allegedly
the video footage of the bolts going into the 737 Max where like the plug blew out, mm-hmm. Which is not sexual. It sounds sexual that the plug blew out, but it's not. It's totally about a plane. And they just deleted that footage of that you could see the guy like put or lady or non-binary person put together the plane. Mm-hmm. So
they had like surveillance footage.
Yeah, that they deleted. They just straight up deleted. Like that's what I don't understand about Boeing and their actions. Like, they're an enormous company.
Yep.
Just like don't cooperate with a subpoena or something like a normal company. You know, like they're so big. They don't need to be acting this way.
Yeah. It's really troubling. And, you know, like to take a little bit of a zoom out from like specifically the crimes of Boeing, you know, the airline industry is like a very mature industry, you know, it, you know, has been in a competitive technological development curve for decades. And there's only really so much more that you can do to improve the efficacy of the production process or the cheapness of individual components or anything else. But we live in an economic system that demands perpetual percentage exponential growth of rents. And so what happens, right, is that like the demand for a constant return on investment from the owners of these companies can only really come from doing more shoddy work, pressing their workers even harder, like basically cutting corners and, you know, like doing what they can to like get that profit margin to remain. And that's going to come at consumer safety. That's going to come at workplace conditions. And it's really fucked. It's almost like at a certain point, like all industries, when they technologically mature to the point where they've been optimized as much as possible, they maybe should be taken away from the profit-seeking center of the economy. Like, I don't know, nationalized maybe? Like, the railroads or, you know, the power grid or, like, anything that our, you know, general society relies on to function properly? Like, I don't know. I think it's pretty insane that these things are happening. But it's also very predictable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's a global duopoly between Boeing and Airbus. And
which is also, you know, a predictable, effective capitalist competition.
It just seems like they can kind of do whatever they want if it's just the two of them, right? And you know, all these companies collude, mm-hmm. all this sort of stuff. So it's I know it was like Adam, you were talking about that John Oliver show about it. They specifically mentioned, I think it was important that they did with it. It was like after the Boeing's merger with McDonnell Douglas, who made the DC-10, mm-hmm. which was like the lemon airplane, like it fucking sucked.
Yeah, the other lemon.
Yeah. And it just shows that, you know, like that, yeah, they moved to more like profit seeking, have like a shareholder value. They would like have meetings where it was like recite the stock price, you know, before things would go. It's a fucking dumb shit. Yeah, and yeah, I'm not, of course this is what happens. I don't know. It's gonna kill people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nationalize the airlines.
Yeah.
And maybe shut them down. I don't know. I go back and forth with air travel. You know me. Long time listeners will know I'm very pro Zeppelin. I think that we need to invest in lighter than air aircraft, get way above the jet streams and propel ourselves on solar. It'd be a lot closer to the speed of like a train.
Yeah.
But think about how luxurious it could be.
It could be so luxurious.
You don't have to pay for fuel.
Yeah.
You could make them net zero. Like that's like the cost with running airplanes like that and staff. But yeah, I don't know.
Is there turbulence on a Zeppelin?
During, I believe, a certain like stratospheric height, okay. But then like once you get up there, there's like not a lot of air, so you there isn't as much. Yeah, it'd be like, you know, taking a cruise, but you know, over the air.
Nice.
Never cared much for cruises.
No,
never been on one.
Yeah, but, actually, the more I think about it, I'd never go on a cruise.
Yeah, but...
but a cruise in the skies?
Yeah, come on.
Especially if they had, like, you know, the bicycle deployed down from a grappling hook.
Yeah.
Like, that's my shit, man. Like,
that if I sounds could, terrifying.
That would be so sick, though.
I don't know about that.
So you put your bike on the side of the Zeppelin, right?
Yeah.
And then there's, like, a little, like, door hatch to access your bike.
Yeah.
And then when you're approximately where you want to be, right, you step out of the Zeppelin.
Right.
And, you know, you got, like, an FCBA, like, so you can breathe naturally. Natural. And you get on your bike, and then you click deploy, and it drops you on a cable. And then, you know, you're like swinging down, right? And then as soon as you're not going to like hit a tree or a house or a person or something, then you just like let go of the cable.
Sure.
And you hit the ground running. You know, you get up to full pedal speed. Boom. You're right there at your destination.
Chris is built different.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be sick?
Yes. I was just going over this New York Post story about the Boeing whistleblower. His name's John Barnett, which we should say. He they interviewed the employee at the Holiday Inn who's like, the dude was like eating a quesadilla, scrolling at his phone, and seemed fine. Drank a Coke, and none of his former coworkers believe that he killed himself.
No note?
No.
Yeah, not a suicide.
And he was at the hotel because he was giving testimony.
Yeah, he was in the middle of, like, he was going to finish his deposition, like, the next day.
The only situation that is even somewhat plausible on here is that, like, he false flagged his own suicide to look like a hit.
I thought about that for, like, a second, but... Yeah,
not nearly as effective as staying alive and continuing to, you know, give testimony.
Is it like a disgruntled employee, former employee owns bosses by killing self?
Yeah,
in the middle of testimony.
I mean, I just don't buy it. It's like that would be so much less effective than staying alive.
Yeah,
staying alive. I wish I had actually looked more into this, but did you guys hear at all about the CEO that died in her Tesla that, like, backed up into a pond?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like the sister-in-law of Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it because the glass was, like, too bulletproof?
It's a suicide fucking vehicle. It's right. it locks you in. It there isn't mechanical overrides for the doors, which is insane. I don't know what this, like, I wish I spent, actually maybe we break and we look into the story a little bit, but, like, that's fucking crazy that, like, a CEO of a big company, like, dies because her Tesla either drove itself in reverse up over an embankment. Into a lake. And then she was apparently texting people
to try, like, to get. Yeah.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Like, these vehicles have more sensors than fucking God.
Yeah.
And they're used to, like, make sure that, like, when the autopilot, like, decides to kill you, that there's plausible deniability where they're like, oh, see, the,
it turned off.
You know, they were looking down. Like, they didn't have their hands on the steering wheel, like, for that second.
While going backwards.
But just, like,
at full speed.
There isn't a fucking water sensor that's like, oh, I'm gonna contact authorities because you're, like, trapped in a vehicle that doesn't have fucking working doors or windows. like, for God's sake.
I know, it's mind-blowing. Yeah.
The tire pressure light probably went off.
Yeah, that's
it's just so fucked up because, like, this company has so much goddamn money. And they make, like, what, 5% of the vehicles are worth more than the rest of the auto industry combined. And they skirt around labor law. It's absolutely insane. Like, I don't know. I feel like Tesla's going to go down in a fucking, like, lithium fire. And, you know, it's going to crash the entire global stock market. And, like, we're going to enter a global recession that will last 20 years.
Yeah, right. It will take us all down with it. Yeah. Yeah, there's just so many institutional investors in Tesla. Yeah, like, we'll be fine. Yeah,
everyone's 401ks. It's just like, not good business fundamentals.
No,
when the entire thing is buoyed on government subsidies that are going to get taken away because Donald Trump's going to get reelected.
And
he hates electric cars.
Brick?
Yeah.
Let me just find a wildfire. Seems like we've been going for a while.
I think we've been going for a while. Yeah, we've got
60
minutes.
All right. Let's get her done.
Yes.
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 All right, we got like a wildflower and a half for you today, right? So the first one is about home sale prices.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably rare among people our age in this room. We're all homeowners.
Yeah.
And boy, howdy, is it expensive?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I am an oppressed person. Now, one thing that makes buying a home really expensive is like all the fucking people you have to pay, right? Yeah. You're not just buying you're not just buying a house.
Yep.
There's like all these fucking people that want to get paid off too.
Yes.
And a couple of those people are the real estate agents.
Yes.
Right? And they're charging like up to like 5%.
6% some places.
Yeah.
On like the biggest purchase of a person's lifetime.
Yeah.
That they'll spend most of their lifetime paying off in the form of rents to lenders.
Yeah.
And yeah, just by being in between the buyer and the seller, both the seller's real estate realtors and the buyers,
yeah,
both charge up to 6% commission.
Yeah,
just on
the price of the home, right? And so it's like, man, I do. I remember buying my house, and like you know, they're cutting all the checks,
mm-hmm.
and like my real estate agent just like gets this like fat check. I'm like, God damn it, that sucks.
That's gotta be like the craziest place to be in the economy. Like in the commodity of housing that is constantly going up at rates that are way beyond inflation, the fastest rising, most like stably rising value of things that are exchanged in American commerce, and to be like there at every single changing of hands, making like a cool 6% on every single sale. Like that is insane. That's like a money printing machine that never like will slow down.
Yeah, man.
But it's slowing down.
But now it is. So there is a class action suit for like close to $500 million. Yeah, like dollars.
$417 million dollars.
Yeah, against the National Association of Realtors that will now make it, will put a cap, I guess, or you know, it's going to severely limit how much you got to pay these motherfuckers to get a house, right? And it makes it easier to do it without a real estate agent, mm-hmm. also. So, you know, home ownership, not, you know, maybe, you know, in an ideal world, maybe, you know, there wouldn't be private ownership of property, but until we get there, making it a little bit cheaper doesn't hurt. So that's half a wildflower, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, nothing's exactly quite happened yet. And there's, you know, it's fucking.
Well, the suit won,
yeah.
And then the changes should, you know, especially with being able to cut them out entirely, like save thousands and thousands of dollars for like people trying to either get their first home or trying to move.
Yeah, because that is actually an almost as bad problem, is like people not wanting to move because the prices are so high. Like, yeah, your house got, you know, got raised in value, but so did all the other homes, and interest rates. So right, so you don't want to change your interest rate. You want to lock that in.
Yeah. What are they now?
Like
6-7% or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. It's almost as much as brokerage fees.
Yeah. To the this makes me feel like a boomer more than anything.
Yeah.
It's like I'm looking at like Gen Z.
And
just like, bro, it's not my fault. But like, I am so sorry that you didn't exist with the capacity to make a payment on a house like when I did, because it's like basically like the Gen Z basically has decided that they're like, I'm never going to own a home.
There's no pathway to owning a home that doesn't involve like family wealth or I don't know, like contract murder. I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's like nothing. This shit's not happening. Man.
Fire up the Hitcoin machine.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yo, I got the orb already warmed up. Come here. Have you gotten any WorldCoin? I want you to exchange on my marketplace.
Yeah. Okay, but then the real wildflower, the full in bloom wildflower, comes to us on International Women's Day. These were dudes.
Ooh, International cool. Working Women's Day.
Working Women's Day. Oh, yeah. Day. Yeah.
Good point. Good, and St. Patrick's Day.
Good correction. Well, today's St. Patrick's Day, but I don't think they're the same, right? This happened on International Working Women's Day. Is that France made abortion a constitutional right.
Fuck yeah, France.
We're stand a short king in the person of President Emmanuel Macron, who has promised to, quote, "He will not rest until women across Europe have the same protection."
To which I have to say, I love your enthusiasm on this issue, Macron, but sleep is really important. Like, if you're really trying to get women across Europe to have the right to access reproductive health care, you got to sleep, bro. Like, you're going to make flubs, mistakes, gaffes. You're going to, like, you know, shake the hand of a German person the wrong way. It's going to be a disaster if you don't sleep. So, like, I love the rhetoric, but, like, sleep, bro.
Yeah.
Do we know why they did it? I mean, abortion rights weren't under attack in France, were they? I mean, was it, like, just a response to what's going on over here?
I don't know. It could also be, like, Macron desperately trying to get someone to pay attention to something else, except for like the, you know, that isn't the literal piles of shit that are being dumped around his house.
Yeah, almost certainly it was something like that. But that being said, showing that it can be done, and once again, in the country where they fucking riot if you try to make them work an extra hour. They fucking riot if you try to, like, lower the retirement age. And riots get the goods, folks. Riots get the goods.
There's 80% of French people back the fact that abortion is legal. That's a weird way to put that, Al Jazeera. So it doesn't entirely seem like there was anything precipitating this, probably other than... wanting to just pay attention, make French people pay attention to literally anything else. Yeah, but it's good. It's still very good. And agreed. It makes it the first country in the world to put abortion in its constitution.
So
nice.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
This almost makes up for the invasion of Libya. Almost. So we did not touch Israel Gaza at all on
look
this
at
episode,
us.
Which you know, and mostly because there's nothing good that's happened at all. But
every time we did cover it, though, good things happened.
Right. No, but yeah. Like Chuck Schumer, he's got words. He's got words for Netanyahu. He's like, hey, your days are numbered, pal.
Wow.
Rhetorically.
Ooh, them's fighting words.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Probably nothing will come of that at all.
Absolutely nothing.
But, yeah. The rhetoric is shifting.
Yep. And, much like the pier that they want to build.
You think that's going to happen?
No, that shit's not going to fucking happen.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
What's the pier?
This is the plan that Biden rolled out in the State of the Union. Talking about how because our partners, who we're giving a unprecedented military package to for free, are using that military package to blow up aid convoys, that, you know, we're taking the matter seriously, and we're going to build a pier to drop off something like 200 truckloads worth of aid every day, and that is almost certainly not unlikely to happen. Both logistically as well as just like, wouldn't the cheap thing be to just stop Israel from blowing up the convoys of aid, or like raving too hard at the border to keep them coming in?
You know, it's complicated.
Sorry, I always do this with our wildfires. Yeah, right. I apologize.
Pick shit back up.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, do we have anything to plug? Anything?
I got a show on April 6th, okay. which is, you know, decent. I think it's like 3 weeks away. But hey, if you're listening to this, mark your calendars. El Dorado. We are also working on the album, which is
making... Sounded great.
Yeah, it's making a lot more progress. Like yesterday, I had like a six-hour session with the ZG boys, and we're bringing in local artist and audio engineer Jason Martin to do some production and mixing and mastering on that. And it's going to be the best Salami Giuliani record.
It's going to be very cool.
Yeah. And I'm very excited about it. So that'll be what I'm working on in my off hours the coming weeks. Do you have anything to plug?
I'll probably have another interview about my book at a in the next couple of weeks or months. That's all I know right now.
Yeah. Without giving it away, I heard a rumor that you might be on my favorite podcast.
We'll see.
And so here's hoping.
All right. Adam, do you want to talk about it?
I don't have anything to plug. I'm excited for the first day of spring.
Okay.
Hell yeah. When is that?
The 19th.
Yeah. That's 2 days.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We had such a beautiful day yesterday.
Yeah, it was a nice day.
Yeah. I feel like my soul has thawed.
Yeah. And, Do you guys have, like, favorite spring rituals?
Gardening? Definitely.
Okay.
Running. I'm going to get back into running. Uh-huh. Maybe as early as today. But I have had a couple of beers, so that might be a crampy situation. We'll see.
I sacrifice a deer.
Nice. Nice.
Really?
No. No.
Oh, you know.
No ritual. I'm still getting used to seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two dozen, like a dozen years in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still... I don't know what the fuck to do with.
Yeah, like an epigenetic,
yeah,
you know, thing you're trying to overcome.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. All right then.
Yeah. Well, how about you? What's your favorite spring tradition?
I'm gonna collect up all the sticks that have fell in the yard and then burn them.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, you can invite people out. You're gonna have a little.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Probably on a Saturday.
Hell yeah.
I'll let you know.
All right, I'm there.
Oh yeah, I like burning stuff.
We can shape them into. People that we don't like.
Set it on fire. A little effigy action.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
all right. Effigy effectiveness.
Yeah,
let's make it happen. Let's imbue the spirits of our enemies in these fallen twigs.
Well, I will let you say the prayer.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Adam, for coming on and rapping with us.
Thanks for having me, and hopefully, I don't get fired.
I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll set up a GoFundMe if so.
Sweet,
you'll be
sweet.
Fine. Yeah. thank you all for listening. I forget how to do the sign off. If you want to hear more of us, you can find us on Twitter,
Ironweeds Pod,
Instagram,
Ironweeds Pod,
and email us. Why don't you at IronweedsPod at gmail.com. All right. I miss you, my wife. Love you. Bye.
Bye, Redney.